verse 6, it talks about to forbear working. We have that power to forbear working. But over in verse 13, he says we didn't do it. And verse 12. Now, what he's saying here is that I have these powers to do all these things and to lead this woman about. And this is a different word, Greek word. And it means to cause her to just go about from pillar to post, from here to there, to just drag her around. Have I not power to drag her around? I'm glad they said lead about, leader. But it's just, you know, take her from here to there. And when he's talking about power or authority, he's talking about the fact that he has the right to ask the Corinthians for the finances to do all these things, to eat and to drink. If you don't believe it, he talks about muzzling the ox and all that kind of stuff here later on that we'll see. And he's saying, I have this right to lead about and to ask you for money, but I'm not going to do it. Now, we're leading into some things right now. We're talking about, start out with money. And he's talking about money, too. And the reason I want to teach this lesson tonight is this is going to be your clue. Take that fellow with a five-pole tent. What was my clue that he didn't see any vision? When he wanted the $20 bills, right? That was my clue. And he said, bring it to me. God's going to bless you if you give me your money. And we've all been through a lot of that kind of stuff. So we'll be talking about money too. And you're going to discover time and time again that this will be the clue to tell you when the prophet is prophesying right or wrong. Do you remember who went the way of error after the way of Balaam? In Revelation? Don't you remember that? It's in Revelation chapter 2 and 3 about they took the error of Balaam. And what was Balaam's error? He went the way of seeking profit. He was God's prophet. Prophet. Well, he was God's prophet, but he wanted to profit on his prophecy by making money off of it. And there's one of your clues that you're going to see. God's prophets then will give the prophecy freely without charging you or binding you. But you know something? The gifts and callings of God are without repentance. That means God doesn't turn around, take them back. But a lot of God's anointed ones do turn around and go back to the way of temporal society and world. And you know what? They can still have miracles. That's the hard part, especially for young Christians to see, that a person can still have miracles and be a rat, a real rascal, a no-goodnicka. For that's not the clue. So let's watch it and see. Here Paul is saying, I have this power, but I'm not going to put you under this money thing. I'm not going to hold you to this money affair in your lives. Now we're going to study prophets and prophecies and find out how Paul got his power and that kind of thing. In Numbers chapter 12, God is speaking. You want to turn to it? Maybe I'll do the reading tonight because I want to get it on the tape. Does anybody have it? Numbers 12, get it before I do. Who's got it? You got it? Go ahead. Oh, you don't know which verse. 12:6.
And he said, hear now my words. If there be a prophet among you, I, the Lord, will make myself known unto him in a vision and will speak unto him in a dream.
God said, from this time forward, he will speak to his prophets two ways. What are they? Dreams and visions. Do you remember in Acts, in the last days, saith the Lord, I pour my spirit upon your sons and shall prophesy. Young men see visions, old men dream dreams, and you remember that one.
I still see visions.
I'm a dreamer.
My beard's red. Well, anyway. Yeah, you're getting it. Hang in there. And upon my servants and handmaids in those days will pour out my spirit. Now, as many as are led by the... They are the manifest grown-up, you see, sons of God. Now, they will get dreams and visions. Now, there are those who believe that God has stopped speaking to his people when he wrote the last chapter of the book of Acts. There are some major evangelical denominations and groups who believe that God does not deal anymore with his people on a personal basis. Now, just out of curiosity and without making fun of anybody, how many of you have had a personal experience to know that God still deals with his people individually and personally today? Let me see your hands. All right, there's enough for that right there. That you've had those kind of experiences that you know God still speaks to his people, and he still is interested in, can I say, what color tie you put on. Now, there are people that are convinced that he's not interested in the minute detail, but according to my understanding, God, his eyes on the sparrow. The minutest detail he takes observation of. Is that all right? Do you see what I'm trying to say there? So I'm convinced that he does care about those things. Now, in the chapter right in front of it, in chapter 11, I want to call your attention to, let's start out here, verse 25. The Lord came down in a cloud, I'm in 25, 11, 25, and spoke unto him, and took the spirit that was on Moses, and gave it unto the 70 elders. And it came to pass that when the spirit rested upon them, they prophesied and did not cease. Now, I'm not saying that God took a pie server and cut the spirit in 70 pieces. But in a sense, they had a lesser measure of the spirit than Moses had. You follow what I'm saying on this now? And the reason for that is over in 12, chapter 12, verse 6, if there's a prophet among you, I want to speak to him in a vision and a dream, but my servant Moses is not so, who is faithful in all my house, with him will I speak mouth to mouth, even apparently, not in dark speeches, as a similitude of the Lord shall he behold. In other words, man to man, mouth to mouth, face to face with Moses, but with the prophets, a lesser spirit. Same spirit, yes, but in magnitude smaller. Is that all right? It's difficult for me to fully... it's spiritual in the first place, and you can't... We don't have the words, but... Whereas with Moses, it's, you know, shall I go, shall I not go? Shall we stay, shall we sell, shall we buy? And God will say, yes, no. But with the prophets, it's not that way. The prophets have to seek the Lord, and he'll speak with them, yes, but in dark sayings. Doesn't it say dark sayings here? Now, with Moses, not so. It won't be dark sayings. I'm in verse 8 and 9 now. 12, 8 and 9. But with the prophets, it's dark sayings, visions. And how many of you have had a dream and it was difficult to tell your mother or your daddy or somebody what the dream was about? Why? Why was it? It was dark sayings. It was ethereal. It was nebulous. And you really couldn't put your finger on it. And yet it was very real what was happening. That's what we're trying to get at right now. And so these prophets began to prophesy. I also want to call your attention to one other thing, that Elijah had a school of the prophets. Well, if he had a school of the prophets, then prophecy can be learned. It is a gift, but it can be sharpened. Are you following what I'm doing on this? Or you wouldn't go to school to learn to prophesy. And Saul went to the school of the prophets. You remember the story. And he came down from the mountain singing. Wherefore the saying went about, is Saul also numbered among the prophets? where he was crowned to be the king, and now he was going around prophesying. For he had learned to prophesy in song by attending the school of the prophets. Now, does that upset you, or does it help you to understand that prophecy is not only a gift, but prophecy is a sharpened gift through training? Now, if that doesn't make sense, let me try it another way. When I first started having these visions for people, I can remember a vision that I had for somebody who's in this audience tonight that I don't want to go into detail, but that was about 10 to 12 years ago, and I had that vision, and because of the nature of the vision, I decided to express the vision differently than I had seen it and tried to make it more palatable to the person that I was prophesying to. Well, I found out later on that God is a gentleman, and he never shows me anything that the person can't palate or accept. And the reason I can still remember that prophecy and the interpretation is that it came up from my heart where it should, but instead of coming out of my mouth, I whirled it around in my mind, and then it came out of my mouth. Now, some of you are aware of the fact that after years of training, see, there's your schooling or sharpening, now it comes up from the heart right out of the mouth, and I don't remember how many times it was yesterday. People call on the phone and I gave them visions and all that kind of stuff. I can't even remember what they were because they just come right out and flow out, and they do not operate up here in the mind, because if they came to my mind, I would remember. I have a good memory. It's getting a little worse, but my forgetter's getting better. But whatever it is, when I do process things in this mind, it does remember. But because the vision comes up from the heart and right out of the mouth, I don't remember. But I didn't always do it. Are you following what I'm saying? And I learned through experience and then sharpened that gift through training and working with it. Now that makes sense, doesn't it? And this is a biblical pattern. There's nothing wrong with that pattern. There are people who say God doesn't deal with us that way nowadays, but our experience indicates that he does. Our experience indicates that our God is just as loving to us as he was to those guys 2,000 years ago. And he's just as interested in us as he was them. However, we have an advantage. We have the Bible. So, a lot of the things God doesn't bother to tell us because he already told us. Come on. He doesn't have to tell you to live a moral, ethical, you know, walk the chalk line, because you already got it. But there are certain circumstances every once in a while where you don't know whether it ought to be the left or the right. And during those times, he does have a will for your life. And he has a direction that he wants to take you. And so then we want to know it. All of us want to know his will for our lives. So he sent prophets. But there were two prophets. Now, out of the 70, 68 prophets donned clerical robes. Can I say backward collars? And I'm not on any particular denomination because a lot of them use backward collars. And they went into the temple and began to prophesy. But two prophets refused to go in the temple. And they wore overalls and painter pants. And Eldad and Medad did prophesy in the camp. 68 clergy and two lay preachers. Are you following what I'm doing on this now? Well, when the clergymen heard about this, why don't you think they didn't tighten their robes of righteousness? And Joshua, the son of Nun, I'm over in Numbers chapter 12. You ought to read the whole story. I can't take it all now, but it's all in chapter 12. And Joshua, the son of Nun, ran up to Moses and said, "Moses, my father, the 68 are prophesying in the temple." And they're doing everything in a very formal, religious way, the way it ought to be. But Eldad and Medad do prophesy in the camp. Forbid them, my Lord! Stop them from showing God to the common people, from revealing God's will to the laity. You see what's happening? Moses said to Joshua, Joshua, are you doing this for the sake of Eldad and Medad, or are you asking this for your sake? That's a paraphrase, but that's what he said. And then he said, I would to God that all God's people would prophesy. Now that's what Moses said, and it's over here in Numbers 11:29. No, I think it's 12:29. I may have done that wrong. Is it 11:29? Oh, sure, that's right. That'd be the chapter in front. Because 12, here's where he's talking about the prophets. So it's in 11:29. I would to God that all of God's people were prophets and would prophesy. Now, just turn to the one next to you. Don't say anything, but look at him. Just look at him for a minute. I would to God that all God's people were prophets. Turn and look at him. Look at the one next to you. I would to God. Are you looking at him? Have you got the idea? I would to God that all God's people were prophets and would prophesy. Now, Moses gave that prayer. Do you think that God heard the prayer?
Yes.
Do you think God will answer Moses' prayer?
Yes.
Now, here's the problem. It tells us in James that if any man lack wisdom, let him ask of God, he'll give liberally, will not upbraid for not even knowing. But it doesn't say when God will give the answer. This is tough now. It says God will give the answer, but it doesn't say when. All right, when did God make all God's people prophets? In Revelation chapter 19, verse 10, I fell at his feet to worship him, and he said, see thou do it not, for I am thy brethren, of thy brethren, that have the testimony of Jesus. I'm a fellow servant. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. What is the spirit of prophecy? The testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. Revelation 19:10. Therefore, whenever anyone is giving the testimony of Jesus, they're operating under the, say it, spirit of prophecy. Have you ever talked to anybody about Jesus? Then you have had operating on you the spirit of prophecy. Is the point made now?
Yes.
Is it well established? You're prophets. We're all prophets. Because we've given the testimony of Jesus. Now, let's go on to the third part now, and this is where it's binding. In Exodus 32, I guess I'll start with verse 1. When the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, I'm in Exodus. That's under E. Yeah, next to the last chapter going left. Oh, no, I'm not under X. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down out of the mount, the people gathered themselves together unto Aaron and said unto him, up, make us gods which shall go before us. Now, do you remember I read this to you at first? You, Aaron, make us gods which shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we wot not what's become of him. Aaron said unto them, break off the golden earrings which are in your ears, of your wives, of your sons, and of your daughters, and bring them unto me. All the people break off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them unto Aaron. Now, there are those who say you shouldn't have golden earrings. That proves it. There are others who read the scripture and said,
No. They should have left them in their ears. That proves it. Well, you caught that or not. So we're not here to teach standards of holiness. There are plenty of Christian groups and denominations that will tell you whether you should or shouldn't have gold earrings and that kind of stuff. But where did he say to bring the money? You got it. You got it. You saw right through it, didn't you? Bring it to me. Okay. Now along the same line, go to 35. Verse 4, 35, 4. Moses spake unto the congregation. Now, by now he's come down. You remember all the story. Right. He spoke to the congregation, the children of Israel, saying, this is the thing which the Lord commanded, saying, take ye from among you an offering unto the Lord. Whosoever is a willing heart, let him bring it, an offering unto the Lord, gold, silver, and brass. Willing heart. Offering. Any coercion? Tricks? And who are you going to bring it to, Moses or the Lord? Are you following? See the difference? I order you to take all those earrings and bring it to me. If you're of a willing heart, then bring your gold and your silver and your brass to the Lord. You see this difference now? Were both men anointed? Aaron and Moses. Were both God's men. That's hard. The guy that made the golden calf, God's man? Yep. Peter didn't always do everything right either. Neither did Paul. You see what I'm doing? And so now we're beginning to see there are those who are building something, and the thing that they're building, Aaron, is a substitute for the leaning of the Lord. Make us gods that will go before us. Make us golden calves that will lead us and show us the way. Well, this is not a history lesson. There are men today who are saying, bring me your money and I will show you the will of the Lord for your life. Bring me money and join our group. Or a lot of times it's join our group and then we'll get your money. And pretty soon, you can tell in every one of those, when the structure starts putting pressure on you to put your money in the pot, that's proof it's not a God. Now, did you hear what I said? Same pot, same dollar. It's not what you do, it's why you do it. Is your motive to satisfy the needs of your society when you give the offering? How many have been in societies where they purposely create a situation so that if you don't put money in, it will be obvious? Have you seen that? All right. Well, then where's one of your proofs right there? That is not of God, but it can be God's man. How many of you, when you were little, played on a teeter-totter? Teeter-totter. Seesaw. And when you play on a seesaw, teeter-totter, what do? And after you're tired of going up and down, what do? First, you start to balance it. Come on now. We've all tried to get it in balance. Then you notice as you lean forward and lean back, you could shift the balance of it. Come on. This is a very difficult lesson. And I'm reaching for a balance. But I want you to see something. God can still be operating in that ministry even though it's doing wrong. See? But if you want to know when the offering is of the Lord and when to put in and when not to and when the pressure is from the God and when it's not, one of the first clues is you have a willing heart and you're not responding to the pressure of your society or those above you who are creating situations. A salesman for a certain book came to our home. We had recently moved to a certain city. Back in those days, I was an engineer. The tithe that I gave to our new church was almost as large as the total of all the tithes of all the people that had been going there for a long time.
This Bible teaching by David E. Ball will continue on cassette number 2.